Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radio Lab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radio Lab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Those of you who've listened to the campaign coverage on this program know that we've had Jamil Smith and Anna Marie Cox, the political team, the political analysis all-stars, as I sometimes call them, from MTV News. They're coming back on now. Jamil's here in the studio. Anna Marie is on her way. Hi, Jamil.
Hey, Brian.
And you know what I want to do? I want to actually play a couple of clips of Trump from his victory statement in the middle of the night, which was very conciliatory. It was not the Trump that we've heard on the campaign trail by and large. That doesn't mean that he wasn't just scripted for the moment and he isn't going to revert to what we think is type. But given the way the conversation was going in that last segment and really all morning, and given what Gail was saying to give us some hope, Gail Collins, about maybe we know the parameters of Donald Trump's craziness and maybe they're not, you know, the worst that we could think about them. Let's at least hear, and I figure most of you did not hear this because this was really in the middle of the night. I lose track, 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. And let's hear a little conciliatory Donald Trump, starting with after he mentioned that he got a congratulatory call from Hillary Clinton.
She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign. I mean, she fought very hard. Hillary has worked very long and very hard over a long period of time, and we owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I mean that very sincerely. Now it's time for America to bind the wounds of division. We have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people. Time. I pledge to every citizen of our land that I will be president for all Americans, and this is so important to me.
Donald Trump in the middle of the night, Jamil Smith from MTV News, and now Anna Marie Cox from MTV News also joining us. Hi, Anna Marie.
Hi.
So that clip, I don't know, Anna Marie, it sounds like maybe he's not going to lock her up after, you know, he's inaugurated president of the United States and he pledges to every citizen of our land to be president for all Americans. You're rolling your eyes.
I am. Well, they've been in a little bit of a nonstop roll since this campaign started. There's a lot of inertia behind that eye rolling. You know, I guess we knew we couldn't trust him, right? We knew we couldn't take him at his word. It turns out, one of the things I said last night, it'll be exciting to find out what his real policies are, I guess.
Since he didn't run on any policies.
Since he didn't run on them. And he did run on slogans, and lock her up was, I guess, a slogan. We can't trust him. We don't know what he's going to do. I mean, I think he sounded the right notes last night, but you can't to listen to that speech and compare it to even his convention speech. Mm-hmm. It was just a total, you know, disharmony. And also, like, one of the most disturbing things in his stump speech to me was his little, he would always end with one America under one God, you know, worshiping one God and one flag. That, to me, is the opposite of I'm going to be president of all Americans. So which Donald Trump did we elect? It just seems like this weird notion that we can all breathe a sigh of relief that he's not the jerk we thought he was?
I guess under one God, you could take either way. You could take it as a statement of everybody's common humanity, or you could take it as, I have my favored religion, and that's the God that is the ordained one of the United States. Jamil?
I think what we can take from this is that Donald Trump, when scripted, can be anybody who he wants to be. But what we really think we should look to is the record of his behavior that we've known for really decades now. And what does that show us? It shows us that he is a vengeful person. It shows us that he is a crude, incurious person. And those three things alone not only fill me with fear for the legacy of Barack Obama, for the status of our, frankly, our public works to make sure this country still actually runs, but also for the danger that it puts several people who are marginalized in this country already. I talked to a young woman last night at the Hillary Clinton event at the Javits Center who was a first-time voter. She's a Nigerian immigrant, grew up in Brooklyn. And the word that she had to use for this is scared. And that is the predominant emotion that I'm seeing. It was the quietest subway ride I've ever had in my decades of living in New York City. And you can tell people are frightened about the possibility of what a Trump administration will do.
And I guess it brings up the privilege that some people in this country have to
treat
politics as a matter of trying to do the right thing, trying to do your civic responsibility, whether you're a liberal or a conservative. Let's say even if you're a progressive, if you have white privilege or some other kind of privilege, to see politics as a civic duty kind of engagement rather than holy moly, the majority in this country has such power over me.
And people's lives are
on the line. And I'm poor and I'm whatever. And what the government decides so affects me directly that it's, you know, that's why we're hearing different tracks, I think, of, okay, our democracy is resilient. We can go forward and do things, which is true on the one hand. And on the other hand, I'm so devastated. I'm so afraid. My children can't get out of bed.
Yeah, I mean, all of that is true. One thing, a thought that occurred to me yesterday, you know, I guess we had record low turnout, lowest turnout since 2000, right?
Yes.
What, nationally?
Nationally.
Yeah, nationally. Yes. I mean, unfortunately, in places where it didn't matter, people turned out a lot. You know, this is the Electoral College really did damage to the amazing turnout of Latinos across the country because they voted in states that wound up, you know, it not mattering how much they turned out. The phrase that keeps coming to mind is the apathy is a privilege. That there are people out there who this you know election won't really matter for. I mean, I'm probably one of them. I'm a white straight woman with a pretty good job that's probably not going to go away. I could afford to look at this election as, oh, no, lesser of two evils. There was a lot of people out there who thought that that's what this election was about. And they made a choice. They made a choice I think in some way they were on this. Voting is simply a thing that you do to kind of vote your favorite flavor, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's ice cream. It's chocolate and vanilla, as it were. But, you know, some people, that's apathy is not a privilege. They may have also not liked their choices, but they recognized it was about, and it sounds so overdramatic, but
it's really not.
It's not. This is, I mean, I speak from a lot of, you know, one place that I feel like I have a lot of personal connection here is that, you know, I live in a community of a lot of recovery in Minnesota where a lot of people I know have gone to rehab and treatment on Obamacare. And if that gets repealed, like, you can't look at this nation and look at the opioid epidemic and think things are going to be okay if Obamacare gets repealed. Like, there just is one, like, as when I look at my personal life and, like, who I know will be impacted besides my friend Jamil here,
yeah,
like, I think of that.
And maybe this is where the responsibility of actually having to govern rather than campaign clicks in, and it and nothing so crazy as just repeal Obamacare and then we'll figure it out from there actually takes place. And this is at the level, Jamil, of the Republican Congress, not just Donald Trump. Right? It's easy for them to, in the House, pass repeal Obamacare bills 15 times when they know they're going to get vetoed.
Right.
When they have an actual Republican in the White House, then they have to be like, holy moly, if we take health insurance away from 20 million people who just got it recently because of Obamacare, what else do we have to put in place?
Well, I think if we've learned, we can learn anything from this election in the short term, is that we cannot rely upon our better angels in this society. We need things like the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. We need checks on this kind of wanton resentment resulting, manifesting itself in results like this.
Mr. Lincoln isn't here to debate you on that point about the better angels.
Yes. I think what you're seeing here more broadly is a victory for the Republican Party's attitude towards government. Mm-hmm. They have basically tried to do their best, especially since during the Obama years, to make people apathetic, to make people feel like their government doesn't represent their interests, to make people feel like government can't represent their interests, that in fact government is the enemy. Now, this is something that goes back to Reagan. This is something that goes beyond Reagan, Nixon even. And so this is a victory, a generational victory for the Republican Party. Now, what they do with it remains to be seen. I sincerely think that they will do everything they can to undo the legacy of Barack Obama, not simply because they disagree with him, but because, you know, we've seen this throughout American history, these backlashes against black progress in black excellence. We saw it with Reconstruction when Jim Crow arose out of a need to, you know, this resentment, this fear that suddenly, oh my gosh, these freed black people are going to somehow be equal in our society. We've seen it with regards to feminism. We've seen the backlash against feminism. We've seen how these anti-abortion laws and these laws that fail to protect women from assault and all these other different crimes that are gender specific. We've seen this backlash before. We've just never seen it quite, I think, at this scale.
And not that this is about Hillary Clinton's ascent as an individual, but I've seen every variation of tweet or post talking about, you know, trying to break glass ceilings and getting all caught, all cut up. Mm. And Anna Marie, I think you've talked about this too.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about that. It's hard not to reflect on for people who think that the process of democracy is impersonal and it's just about civic duty. I mean, for I think we've seen in Jamil's subway ride, in the people that I talked to last night as well, like democracy is incredibly darn personal too. And, you know, we've put someone who advocates sexual assault in the White House. I mean, who speaks
boy talk,
mm-hmm. locker room talk.
And sexual assault that he commits.
Yeah.
Not just
Someone who bragged about sexual assault is now, whether or not you believe he did it, you know, whatever. He did. We know this. He bragged about committing sexual assault. And he defeated a woman. And it's one of those things, like, I feel the powerlessness that any woman feels when she has been, you know, groped or assaulted or demeaned by a man in power and had to just swallow it as it because he's in power. Like that is the story of being a woman in America is usually what happens, right? Like it's something terrible happens to you and you just have to just keep going. And this is it writ large. Mm-hmm. That much power going to someone who abuses it to that extent.
Anna Marie Coskin, Jamil Smith from MTV News, and Kylie in Montclair. Kylie, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Very, very long night. I don't have something, what I want to say is not what I want to be saying, but it's really the way that I'm feeling right now. So I'm, one, very hopeful, you know, about our country and our democracy. I have to be because this is all too sad. But I find myself being very angry, and I'm very angry at, like, middle class, kind of, I'm going to call them like regular white people. And I just feel like this was, I feel like people of color got out. Like we got out our vote. Latinos, the Latino vote got out. And I just feel like these are people, the message of the people who won this, who made Donald Trump win this election, these are people that I don't have access to. Like I, as a person of color, I do not have access to these people in the Rust Belt to change their perspective or to meet them where they are and advance their perspective. And I just, I don't know. I'm like, what, and this is so crass, but I want to say like to my, you know, ton of white friends for whom I am some of their only black friend. I'm like, what are you going to do with your people? Like, these are your, this, our country is holding up a mirror to the face of us. And, you know, this is a very extreme set of people, but there is an entry point. And the statistic that I, you know, lean on to say, you know, this is a mirror is, we know what happens when neighborhood blocks integrate. So the racism that these people feel is not foreign to most people in this country. So I guess I just wonder, like, you know, how can we really, really meet these folks where they are and help them to see a I don't know, hear them and help them to move forward? And I guess that's, you know, not a question. It's just kind of where I am right now.
Jamil, did you want to say something to Kylie?
Yes. Well, Kylie, I'm from that Rust Belt. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And I understand what you're feeling right now, and I think being angry right now is a normal and healthy response. Frankly, I think anger needs to drive some action. Anger needs to drive some movement building. Mm-hmm. Anger needs to drive some, you know, constructive reaction to this. But as far as reaching those people, I mean, frankly, there's two things I think. Number one is you can't force somebody to see you as a human being. You can't force someone to recognize your humanity. And really, when a vote for Donald Trump, we need to put it in these terms. A vote for Donald Trump was a rebuke of the humanity of a lot of people in this country. Mm-hmm. It was a sign. It was a statement, whether intended or not. Intent is irrelevant here. Whether intended or not, it was a rebuke of all this progress that's being made in our culture, the browning of America. Browning of America, and also, frankly, the social progress that's been made.
I would say intent matters to this extent, which is that your open heart is really inspiring to me, Kylie. The fact that you've even talking about reaching out to these people who voted in a way that does seem to suggest a lack of care for what you're thinking. Like Jamil wrote this piece for MTV about how we've all been talking about this empathy we need to feel for Trump voters. Where is the Trump voter empathy for everyone else, right?
I
think the intent matters only in this way, which is that if you can keep in mind that sometimes the intent is not direct, explicit racism and misogyny, it does allow you to keep your heart a little bit more open when talking to these people. And I do think that yeah, I keep saying these people in this way that sometimes they talk about
better you than me.
The other, you know. But, you know, we all, I hope, actually know and work with and perhaps have in our families people who we disagree with politically. And I do think this is sound very corny and Pollyannish. In some ways, it's a privilege for me to say it. But we do have to just be able to listen. We need to let anger motivate us to take action, but I think hopefully try to keep it out of our personal conversations with these people. They're the other. We need to listen. We need to hear them. And we need to advocate for our own humanity whenever we can.
Yeah.
Kylie, do you want to say anything else before you go?
Yes, I have a PhD in education policy. I use critical race theory as my theoretical framework. I get all of that. I think, and I appreciate all of that. That's not quite what I'm saying. I think what I'm saying, because I hear you all, what I'm saying is that I live in a town right now that is an integrated town, and we still deal with racism in shiny, lovely Montclair.
Right.
What I'm saying is that there is a perspective in this country that we need to address, and I think that the bridge builders in this instance are white people.
I agree with you, and I think it's going to be on us to be the people that reach out, and on me to educate my fellow white people. Kamau Bell talks about us. He talks about what he calls white pride, and not in the way that perhaps Donald Trump supporters speak of it, but he speaks of it as though white people need to take responsibility for other white people. White people need to have pride in the sense that we are ashamed when other white people behave in ways that are shameful to us.
That's right. And we've talked about, and Kylie, thank you very much. Keep calling us, please.
Thank you for your call. Yes, thank you.
And, thank you.
You know, we've talked about it a lot on this show since the Black Lives Matter movement started, let's say at a greater concentration, that this can't just be about black people advocating for their rights.
Right.
This has to be about a multiracial coalition, and white people have to look themselves in the mirror and ask, what role do I have to play here? Just as men have to look themselves in the mirror and say, what role do I have to play here about sexism and misogyny? I do want to go over some stats about voting. Kylie started by saying, hey, you know, the blacks and Latinos did their part yesterday in turning out. Where were the white people? But it might actually be more complicated than that. Black voters, I'm reading New York Times demographic paragraphs here. Black voters made up 12% of the national electorate, nearly the same as in 2012. And they voted about the same. Mrs. Clinton won a broad majority of black voters, 88%. Compared with 8% for Trump, but Obama received 93% of the African-American vote 4 years ago. Further, young people. People under 30 made up 19% of this year's electorate, the same as in 2012. Clinton got 54% of their support compared with Obama's 60%. Trump had the backing of 37% of voters under 30, the same percentage that Mitt Romney won in 2012. And then you get to Latinos. 11% of voters nationwide yesterday or this voting season, just 1 point higher than in 2012. And this is the one that I couldn't believe when the exit polls came out yesterday afternoon. But I guess they're borne out by the actual count, or maybe this is still, you know, an exit poll projection, but it's on the Times site this morning. It says Mr. Trump got I'm losing the exact line that I'm looking for, but I know it. He got 29% of the Latino vote. That's 2 points higher than Romney. When Latino voting was only 1% more of the voting population than it was in 2012. So where was everybody?
I'm going to be really amazed when more people start drilling down on that. I wonder if class is something that made entry into this conversation, which always, if class is always there, but if that could explain some of this. I also wonder if gender is an issue, and perhaps I also heard someone last night tell a story about a friend whose father was a Latino origin, who just expressed the same kinds of sentiments that we hear from the what we've been talking about at the Rust Belt, the angry white guy. There's some angry, you know, not white guys too, who express the same kind of like loss of jobs, resentment at elites, the same kind of rhetoric, the same kind of argument was apparently working pretty well, you know, for those people too.
Jagjeet in Scarsdale, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jagjeet.
Well, thank you, Brian, for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes. Well, the polls were wrong because there were people like me, those who voted. I'm an immigrant. I've got master's, and I am educated, and I voted for Trump.
You want to tell us why? You can.
Well, the Clinton policy, it only got us into this economic depression. That's one of my main reasons. And secondly, like you earlier alluded, politicians are there to serve, not to build a career on it. And if he's not a politician, I think that's a good thing. And the last thing about, one of the things about sexual assault, in which I do not like that I would be voting for somebody with that kind of thing, but he admits he was wrong. And what I'm hoping good comes out of it is that he support to fight the current assault that's going on around with the women in this particular country.
Did I miss the admits he was wrong part?
Well, he did say that he did whatever he did was, you know, that was back then. That was his attitude back then. And I'm hoping he's grown up from it. and he will stand up to fight it in today's date.
And I'm curious why you blame Hillary, and I guess her ilk. I don't know if by Hillary and hers, you mean the Democratic Party, but for the economy.
Well, let me explain that.
If Bush came in and had mostly a Republican Congress for his time, and we wound up in the toilet with the financial crisis and the mortgages and everything, why blame the Democrats? Why blame Hillary, who was only in the Senate then?
Okay, I'll explain it. Going back, I come from a manufacturing background, by the way, and mm-hmm. I am a registered Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So, to make it straight, I don't go for the parties when it comes to just labels. Back with the Clinton, why did we make China our most preferred trading nation? Before that, it was always renewed year by year. There was a reason for it. And we still have not achieved fully the human rights, etc., from them, yes. Yet we made them a member of the WTO. And obviously, they were going to benefit from it, and obviously our manufacturing class was going to go downhill.
Yeah, but you do know that Bank of China is one of the two banks that Trump still owes the most money to. So it's not like he's not going to deal with China. He's clearly willing to deal with them in a personal way and willing to support them in that way. So what is your confidence that Trump is going to stand up to China on a global stage?
For that matter, it is all about posturing the policy. One single person can't make a change. We brought in Obama. That one person, again, he couldn't push everything around because obviously there is a system around us. Again, it goes back to the fundamental thing. Every politician, he has to start serving the country and stop being career politicians. It's serve and move on. Do it as an honor and move on.
And I have a question. Why do you have faith that Donald Trump, who has bragged about committing sexual assault, who has had a very long record of mistreating women, of berating them, of demonizing them, why do you have more faith that he would do more to address sexual assault, rape culture, what have you, than potentially the first woman president of the United States?
I would have loved to see a first woman president. I come from a nation where Indira Gandhi was the first prime minister of that nation, and yet I could see people in their own homes would not treat women equally, yet they would otherwise elect her as the prime minister. But leaving that aside, let me go back to your answer about the only good thing I see in this is he is one of the person who admits he had done this kind of behavior, and this is something coming in the light that even in today's date, women don't feel secure in a lot of these issues, and they stay quiet, and all this has to change. And I'm hoping this administration that is coming on will help with that.
He did things, just for the record, during the campaign. When you talk about admitting that he was wrong in the past for his language about women, these women who accused him of sexual assault, which we don't know if he committed, his response to some of them was basically, you're not pretty enough for me to have sexually assaulted you, which is not, so much about them, but this sends a signal to all women of the world about how they're thought of.
Right. And also, it's a whole mischaracterization of what sexual assault is about. I don't want to pick on Jarjeet too
and
much.
Jarjeet, I'm going to go, but I really appreciate your call, so
sharing
please call us again.
What I want people to know is he will lead and he will help the immigrants. He'll help everybody if you give him a chance.
Let's hope.
We don't have a choice to.
Did you want to say one last thing there, Anna Marie, about that? You're speechless.
I'm a little speechless. I want to believe that yes, that all the stuff he said that we hate was bad and wrong, and he regrets it. And I want to believe that he can turn on a dime. And he's certainly a chameleon. But Jamil is also right. We all what we really have to go on are his actions, not his words.
Another day we'll talk about the ways that he doesn't subscribe to the Republican conservative orthodoxy that might offer some opportunities for fresh thinking at the policy level when he comes in. I'm not sure that he's going to not get swept into the swamp, to coin a word, of, you know, conventional conservative Republicanism a la Congress. But we'll see. Maybe there's going to be an opportunity there at the policy level for something fresh. Before we go to the news, I just want to acknowledge that – or not acknowledge. I guess it's almost speculate, really, that Hillary Clinton must be having a really tough time figuring out what to say, unless there are just logistical problems, because, you know, she was supposed to speak at 9:30 this morning. That had been scheduled and announced. Then it became 10:30. Then it became 11 o'clock. And now it's 11 o'clock, and we were just told that it's going to be delayed again, and we don't have a start time. So, you know, again, not that it's really about her at this point going forward, but she's obviously having a or apparently having some kind of tough time figuring out how to come out.
Well, it's an important speech. I mean, it's next to her convention speech, probably, you know, the last time she'll address an audience of the size that she's going to have today. And
is it important for the nation?
I think so.
Why?
Because of that quiet subway ride we all had this morning. Mm-hmm. And that the quiet that was across the nation. I think even also, you know, everyone joked and debated whether or not this was going to be like Brexit. And one parallel I see is I think the people in the UK were unwilling to really try to imagine what was the reality was going to be in the day they woke up and it happened or they voted for it. And I think that we're all kind of getting our heads around the reality of today. And I'm hopeful that she will be able to contextualize that reality. We've been talking about stuff, you know, it's all incredibly difficult to kind of process. I want to say a couple of things we haven't hit on. One is everyone needs to acknowledge that voting suppression worked. Yeah. That's another thing that
North Carolina in particular.
It turns out you do need a Voting Rights Act, as Jameel tweeted earlier this morning.
Yep.
And that just on that point, you know, we need to start thinking about what we're going to do today, tomorrow, in 2 years. Those of us who think that this turn of events is not the outcome we wanted, action needs to happen. I think people need to start looking at their local organizations, I think people, you know what, if you're upset this morning, run for school board the next time you get a chance. You smile, but I'm not kidding. Like, we don't let this turn you off of the democratic process. Help, you know, hope that it gets you involved in the democratic process.
Anna Marie Cox and Jameel Smith from MTV News, thank you.
Thank you.